Today's show is brought to you by Vinyl Me Please. Join the Record of the Month Club at joinvmp.com/songspodcast. Hey everyone, before we get into the episode, I do want to give you a friendly reminder that each and every episode comes with a unique playlist via Spotify or Apple Music. You can go to songspodcast.com or scroll down to the description of this episode and click on a link to the playlist, Apple Music, Spotify. They are there for you to experience the songs that we talk about on each and every episode. Thank you so much, and let's get right to it. What's going on, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Songs for the Moment, where every moment it has a soundtrack. I'm your host, Glenn G-Rod Rodriguez, and always with me is Sean Hebert. You don't have like we got to give you a nickname. We don't have to give you a nickname, but if you want one.
I'm good. But what's good? Up, dude?
No, I'm good, man. No, what's going on? How you doing?
I'm all right, man. Chilling on this snowy Sunday morning. I was doing pre-production earlier. Hanging out on the couch, watching the Entourage movie with my wife, drinking coffee.
Hell yeah, man.
It was a good little Sunday, man.
Sounds good to me. So did you guys get a lot of snow down there?
So far, like 3 inches, maybe.
Okay.
It's supposed to snow until like later today.
Yeah. I think it's stopped up here, but yeah, we got like 2 to 3. Started snowing last night after we came from our private theater thing that we do every so often with my roommate's girlfriend's mom's house.
Private theater, yes.
It was nice. We watched Venom. It was actually pretty decent.
Yeah, because I was thinking about renting that in HDR, but it's like $7 to rent a movie in 4K HDR.
It's insane. It was good, though. It was better than I thought it was going to be. For a standalone Venom movie, it was entertaining. I don't get into that fanboy stuff, but other than that, it's snowy and we're ready to do the show this week. We have a couple great news stories. We're going to top off the show here first, and then we're going to get into acoustic sounds as you voted in the poll, which was an interesting poll this week. Warped Tour bands, which would have been an interesting discussion. What else was on there? Skate punk, which I still want to eventually
talk about.
I know
you really want to do that. That's why it keeps going on the poll. Yes. I know you really want it to happen. That's why it's always up there.
I watched this really awesome video on skate punk the other day by this the punk rock NBA dude on YouTube.
I know who that is. That's Finn McKenty, bro.
Where is he from?
So I know about Finn McKenty and the punk rock NBA from, he is friends with the guys that do Nail the Mix and URM Academy, which is the recording thing that online that I do. So he does some content with them because he's from like the recording and music world.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So he's awesome. I love his videos. His content's
great, dude. Yeah.
He knows a lot about his shit. And
he's at the URM summit like every year, man.
Oh, that's sweet.
I plan on going either this coming one for 2019 or maybe 2020 going there. It's like $1,500 for the VIP package, but it's 4 days of just learning recording from like the best in the business right now.
I dig it. I dig it. And he did a video on skate punk and like how it died out. Like he has a series on like why genres die, or at least not completely die, but like they're not popular as they used to be. And it was just so interesting, and like listening to the bands that like I grew up listening to and how the genres kind of like split, and like how there's some of the bands that are still like elitist and don't think everyone should be in it, like NOFX. They kept showing videos of NOFX when he talked about that.
Dude, and that's who I think of when I hear skate punk, though. That Pennywise, The Offspring,
yeah,
that's like mid 90s skate punk.
Yeah, and I mean, no, don't get me wrong, like NOFX is legendary and I like some of their stuff, but like when he talks about elitists, then they show Fat Mike, I just, yeah, he's kind of like that, he's kind of a dick, but you know. It's funny because I was listening to Bad Religion the other day. I was watching like a live video from this past year, and are so old, but like it's just cool that the two guitar players, the bass player, and Greg, the lead singer, they're old. Then the drummer's really young, so it's just weird.
Like you can tell they have a new drummer.
They have a new drummer. Yeah. But they still kill it. And but yeah, we'll eventually get to skate punk. But today is acoustic sounds. I'm very excited about this list. I love acoustic music. I like anything. I love that instrument. Acoustic guitars are great. I am a fan.
But first, we're gonna tackle some news. What do you want to talk about first here, buddy?
Let's talk about, so I found this article because I am interested in CES, I mean, every year, because they always have some really cool new technology come out. Like I always like look forward to what kind of TVs they're coming out with and stuff.
Yeah.
And laptops and gaming stuff. So when I saw that Sony was debuting speakers that can mimic a live concert, I had to look into this. I had to figure what this is all about. So this comes from Rolling Stone. Pharrell Williams led Sony's CES press conference this year to announce 360 reality audio, which sounds like vaguely nonsensical marketing lingo, but is actually an intriguing idea that has garnered many favorable reviews from tech critics so far. Sony is trying to expand high resolution music by adding a spatial dimension, which will build upon the MPEG-H 3D audio format to place vocals, instruments, and other certain sounds on a track around a listener. As a sound engineer yourself, producer, what is that? What is like? Does this sound like a gimmick to you? Are you interested? What do you think?
I think it's a cool idea. I think Sony, I don't think like Sony was sitting there like, in a room like, hey, let's revolutionize how people listen to audio. I think that they saw the popularity of Dolby Atmos and how that is like a 360 sound experience. And I think they're trying to go after that market. If they can do it better, that's cool. But Dolby has had a huge head start on it. And I'm just really curious, as to what the advantage of this would be over that. Really,
it'll be interesting, yeah.
And they also say, you know, it'll build upon the MPEG H3D audio format to place vocals. So you're gonna have to have people that specialize in mixing for that format. So then you're like, and people already had to learn how to mix in Dolby Atmos and get certified in it, which there's very few people that are certified for that anyway. So are people really going to try if it requires a new format?
It'll be interesting to see. The new format will be available on a special new Sony speaker, but the idea is that music fans will be able to hear 360 reality audio music with any speaker system that can project sound in a number of directions, as well as audiophile grade headphones. They're going to be working with, like, you know, streaming services that already include high res listening tiers like Tidal and Deezer to bring the format to the mass market. I forgot about Tidal and how there's a different tier where you can subscribe for high definition audio.
I like that idea a lot.
Yeah.
And I have just heard about Deezer because I saw it as like a thing in my Roku TV. But all credit to Rolling Stone for like the article that we were just like reading. But as far as like my opinion on like the high res listening and stuff, I think it's cool. Before I started collecting vinyl, I was like digitally collecting like the audio file format of vinyl of like FLAC.
Black, yeah.
And ALAC and stuff like that. So that's like half a gig or more per CD that you download. So yeah, but I think it's a cool idea if the execution is right and it's easy enough to encode in and mix in. I think it'd be great if it's affordable. That's really what it comes down to. If it's more affordable than Atmos enabled stuff, then that's cool. I mean, I have Atmos headphones for my gaming console, my Xbox One, but they were like $150.
Well, but, you pay for high quality, like, you know, stuff, you're going to pay a premium for sure.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, like, if you look up a Dolby Atmos, like, home theater system, mm-hmm. you're spending a lot of money. Because you yeah. have to, you, I mean, you have to set that up. Like, spatial audio stuff like that. It's very depend, like your Atmos home system or whatever has to be tuned to like where your center position is in the room, like where you're sitting on the couch, because the stuff has to be like left and right on the top of the ceiling, and it has to fire at you or off the walls and bounce back at you at the right angle.
Okay. Yeah. So I like those, like, back in LA, that there's movie theaters I used to go to that were, Dolby Atmos enabled. It used to be AMC Prime, but I think they changed it to like Dolby Atmos Prime or something. And the theater is so nice. And like, I already had a theater that I used to go to that had the recliner seats, but this one was in a bigger theater, AMC theater, so it was the only theater inside the building that had the nice seats. So it was like, if we wanted to go to that theater because they had other movies that were playing in that certain theater, like Star Wars, yeah, I could have went to the normal theater and went and got the recliner seats like normal. But if I wanted that extra experience with the sound, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to spend, you know, the IMAX prices and go see a movie in Dolby Atmos. I mean, that's just how you should do it. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. I eventually want to get to the point where I'm able to listen to high def audio like that. And, you know, I want to start getting into, you know, audiophile type like headphones, and I want to hear the difference from what I'm already listening to, because I listen to a lot more music than I watch videos or things like that. So, and even as a filmmaker, that's weird, but like, that's just how it is for me. Like, I listen to audio more than, you know, if I watch a movie or if I watch anything, it's a movie. So there you go.
Well, you would be surprised at how the other way it goes too, with like, I'd be surprised how many dudes in bands, when they're not on tour or recording a record, do not listen to music or play music, you know?
Yeah. Because
at that point, you're doing it all the time. And then when you get a break, you really do want a break.
Mm-hmm.
But as a side note to the whole CES thing, to wrap this article up, if you're into TVs, check out the new Samsung micro LED TVs, micro LED TVs. It's basically a modular LED TV, so you can buy square sections of it to make it bigger or change the aspect ratio at will, or change the size at will. So it's truly like a sizeless TV.
I'm digging.
Yeah, that's honestly like, there's a lot of stuff at CES this year, if you're into technology, that like really excites me for the next couple of years, see what's actually going to come out and be the new trend.
I like the little thing that's after this. We'll have to talk about off air, but the Apple opens up its locked ecosystem for TVs.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll be able to buy a TV with iTunes in it. Like, you know, just...
Oh, that would change the game.
That's what they're doing, man. Like, you could buy all the smart, like, all the upcoming smart TVs. You know, you'll have your Netflix, your Amazon Prime, your Hulu, your YouTube, your Google Play, and then you'll have iTunes there. It is not
an Apple TV. Oh man,
you don't need an Apple TV anymore. You know that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and would you be able? They would need to open up the Siri search, because, well, no. See, the reason Apple TV is cool, is because you can do multitasking like you can with an iPhone, but you can do it on your Apple TV. So, like, if you're watching a movie, you can pause it and then go to YouTube, and then switch back to the movie.
Yeah, I'm hoping I get my Apple TV back from LA when I get all my stuff back, because I miss it so much.
Yeah. But we'll anyway, next article, the one I want, it's a quick one. Headline from consequenceofsound.net is Maynard James Keenan confirms Tool have finished recording their new record. Apparently Maynard finished recording the vocals and they are in the quote long mix process, which I can only imagine is extremely long with Tool, because they have really dense mixes. There's a lot going on. And they, I imagine they're like perfectionists and have a bunch of mix notes, which I respect and would expect. So I'm actually really stoked on it. And they have a bunch of tour dates up, that go from May until looks like July.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm excited too. I think the last Tool album that I actually like, I think I've only bought one Tool album, and it was Lateratus, whatever, how do you say it?
Lateralis.
Yes, Lateralis. Yeah, as I like Schism so much.
I think that's their, personally, to me, in my humble opinion, IMHO, that's their best album.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the pinnacle of that band to me. And then like right after that, they put like Mayor Denom's came out, as far as I can remember. So those two albums were like really huge to me. And then I think they happened like back to back. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, at the same time, this all could be a ruse and we could be completely wrong, because Tool is extremely known for trolling their fans with disinformation about albums that are or not even happening.
So watch that they already, it's already done, and like they're just going to release it to surprise people.
It could
one
come
day
out tomorrow, or they could not have a single note of music written yet.
It's so funny.
It could be anywhere in between those two things or those two things.
I mean, we just got a new Perfect Circle album last year. So
yeah, I feel like in his older age, Maynard's like, you know, trying to be more prolific.
Yeah. I remember talking about Perfect Circle with Anthony Quinn back in high school. It was like, that was like his band. So yeah.
But anyway, what did you have to say next about the news, buddy?
I guess we can tag team this next one. I mean, because it's kind of ridiculous and I want to hear, because I didn't really get to read.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. All right. Yeah. So this next article, the headline is Kanye West pulled out of Coachella because the festival wouldn't build him a giant dome. He didn't necessarily pull out of Coachella because they wouldn't build him a giant dome. Coachella wouldn't build a giant dome, so they just stopped asking him to do it. This is what the story goes. So they've been trying to get Kanye to do Coachella for a while. It's been in the works for a while. They've been trying to get headliners because it's a multi-weekend. It's like a double weekend festival. So Kanye is supposed to be headlining, blah, blah, blah. On this short notice, it's like 4 months. He wants them to build this giant dome. And they're like, basically, they're like, dude, this is the one of the biggest stages in North America. We've had multiple mega performers and rappers do huge performance with hundreds of people on the stage at once. It's big enough for you. And he's like, no, it's not. You have to build this. And they were like, it's not feasible. And he pushed it. And they were like, okay, we're not even interested anymore. Don't even worry about it. But apparently it's been kind of hard to lock down some people. I've heard that Justin Timberlake has gone on and dropped off the bill. Things like that. But yeah, it's just, this is also why I'm super excited to have Kanye do the Joe Rogan podcast, because I want him to talk about this. You're like, dude, what's with this giant dome bullshit? Because at the end of the article, there is a blurb that says this wasn't like a one-time thing. Like, this isn't the only time this dome thing has happened. So this has been an issue where quite a few venues have had to turn him down because he wanted them to build him this damn dome.
I'm surprised he hasn't, you know, started his own festival. Then he can build his own dome and it'll be all right.
Well, to quote the article, it's from Billboard. It says, Billboard has learned that West was close to landing a headliner slot at the Governor's Ball in New York, only to have promoters turn down his last-minute dome request and part ways a day before the lineup was announced.
He thinks he's the robots. He thinks he's Daft Punk.
But think about this, though. The logistics of building a dome, right? And the day before they announce him on the bill, he's like, oh, yeah, by the way, you got to build me this gigantic dome or else I won't do it.
Douchebag.
And they're like, okay, then you're not going to do it.
Yeah. I've always been a, you know, a fan of his, and I still like his music, but like as a person, he needs help. he needs help. He's entitled and he's a douchebag and he needs help. And
I cannot wait for this freaking podcast to come out with Joe Rogan.
It's going to be, watch. It's going to be, it's, I hope it's soon. Cause I need it. I need it.
I hope
it's
soon. And I hope nobody gets angry and ends it early.
Yeah. I don't see him getting angry, to be honest. I feel like he knows what he's getting himself into. And if he doesn't, I hope the people around him tell him what he's getting into, because like, he has to know how Joe Rogan's podcast is. I'm guaranteeing, like, I'm just going to put myself out here and say, I think Kanye West watched the episode with Elon Musk and probably got sparked the idea of going on. Is that, and your interview was like,
all Elon Musk is still in the news all the time now after that happened. Like, even about other stuff, like that podcast just put Elon Musk on a new level publicly.
Yeah,
you know, so many more people subscribed to him that listened to Joe Rogan that weren't really Elon Musk fans, if you can be a fan of that kind of person.
I think you can. I think you can, like, be a fan of what he's accomplished in you know, the world of science and space exploration and all that crazy stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And energy. I mean, the dude's done it all. You know, it's pretty incredible, like, how that guy is.
He must not sleep.
He doesn't. You know, successful people like him just probably sleep like, well, didn't he explain that he like slept like a nice decent amount of hours?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, he was really casual about how he accomplishes all this.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think he's an alien.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I do too. But the last story I think we wanted to talk about, and it kind of fits the show, because Vinyl Me Please has been a sponsor of ours for so long now.
Yeah.
The headline reads, U.S. vinyl album sales grew 15% in 2018, led by the Beatles, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, and this last one is going to confuse the living shit out of you. Panic at the Disco.
Can I explain why I think Panic at the Disco is on this chart?
Please do, because I am flabbergasted.
Okay, so the last album that they put out, because I used to refer Panic at the Disco as a band, but like how they've been promoted a lot lately, and I know they've always, bands are always usually promoted by the lead singer, but I just feel like the album that they put out recently, which was called popular releases, Pray for the Wicked, which came out last year. It's just basically the Brandon Urie band. That's what I just got, a Brandon Urie, just solo stuff. But it's a different sounding album than they usually put out. They're very unique for their genre, because they started as an emo band. Now they're like this pop phenomenon. And this last album, to me, is their best work. And
better than their first record.
I think so, to be completely honest. I think it's the most unique sound for what they came from. And Brandon's a great singer. I always loved his voice.
No, he is. He is. I'm not. Yeah, he's a great singer, honestly.
I just think that the style that they're going for now and whatnot, I think it's just, they've kind of grew out of the whole emo scene. And I love that first album with, you know, Right Sins or Tragedies or whatever that song's called. But like, this album is definitely some of their best work. And I know a lot of people liked their album before that. So I feel like I think they're more popular than Fall Out Boy right now. And I like them better than Fall Out Boy. And I was never really a big Fall Out Boy fan, but I can understand why that they're out of the pop rock groups, I guess you could say, they're up there, especially to be mixed in with, you know, three of the greatest acts of all time. You know, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, but yeah, that just confused me on why that's a good explanation, honestly. David Bowie makes sense, because, you know, his recent passing. Pink Floyd and the Beatles are obvious, because, you know, Pink Floyd and the Beatles, but excuse me, every single David Bowie record I've ever seen since he passed has been outrageously expensive, and I haven't been able to buy it because rationalizing spending that much money just on a vinyl, I can't do it.
It's the reason why I haven't bought Random Access Memories. I'm like, I want to jump on it, but like, it's not under, it's like the last time I saw it, it was like $50 though.
It sounds so good though. I don't have it. My neighbor does. So that's how I've listened to it on vinyl.
I can understand why the vinyl thing is. It's like, so they always say history repeats itself, and also like retro things are always cool with like new generation. But it's given the opportunity of people collecting things again, physical, when we're in the world digital. I think it's so cool that people are buying vinyl and buying turntables and record players and, you know, all that stuff. I think it's cool that the generation now are finding out about bands that, you know, their older brothers and sisters, parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles listened to back in the day, and are rediscovering that. People, and you know, the companies are seeing this and they're like, oh, we're gonna release all these albums on remastered vinyl. Like, though, you can buy all the old Bruce Springsteen stuff on remastered vinyl. You can buy Pink Floyd and David Bowie, like we were talking about, and the Beatles. They just put out that collection, and you know, each album that hits a anniversary, they're putting out special edition vinyls, or records, or whatever you want to say. I got butchered on a Reddit post by saying yeah, vinyls on a video once, so I gotta watch what I say, or they're gonna come get me again.
Reddit can be rough, dude.
There was a whole fucking thread, just a whole thread, dude. I will never forget it. I'll never forget it. But I think it's great, and I think it's cool that the sales are up. That's very inviting and very cool. Like, you know, it's gonna start getting bands to want to put their stuff out, and you know, on vinyl. We went to a concert in Delaware, me and my roommate, last summer, Fits in the Tantrums, and there was a band that opened up for them called Spirit Animal, and I think all they had on sale was just their record on vinyl. Like, that's all they had with them. So
it's a big thing now, is buying a record on vinyl. That's pretty much the only way I buy an album. I mean, because I subscribe to Apple Music. So if I'm in my car, I use my phone to listen to music. And if I'm home, my turntable's here, so I have it on vinyl. That covers, and I mean, my Apple Music works on my laptop, so I don't need to buy it from iTunes. I pay $10 a month, and I'm covered, you know?
Yeah.
But buying the vinyl to me, even though I'm streaming from Apple Music, they get nothing per stream. So I feel like buying the vinyl, at least, you're supporting them in at least that way, and then seeing them at a show and getting a shirt or something.
And I think it's cool. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. But I wouldn't buy a vinyl at a show, or at least not in the beginning of the show. I would buy it on the way out.
Yeah.
Just because, A, you got to hold it, which sucks, and it might bend and stuff like that.
That's true. I mean, I haven't bought a vinyl at a show yet.
I went to a Pig Destroyer show, and they handed out a Flexi limited edition, but like at the door, a Pig Destroyer Flexi vinyl, and mine got creased so bad during the show.
Ah,
yeah, that sucks. I had to throw it out.
So I lied. I definitely bought a vinyl of a record at a show, but this was before I had a record player. Even like, I just bought it because I was like, I eventually want to get something that could, you know, I can, you know, a turntable. So I went to a show with Zach and his ex girlfriend. Our friend Zach, I say it out loud like everyone knows who he is, but we went to a Flogging Molly show at the House of Blues in Atlantic City. He got tickets because while he was working on the ferry ship, whatever, the band that we saw at Bamboozle, the Riverboat Gamblers, were on there, and he's like, oh yeah, I saw you guys at the Bamboozle show, and we met and all that good stuff. So they hooked him up with tickets and stuff. It was really cool. So we all went, and I ended up buying one of their albums on vinyl. And that was the only time I ever bought vinyl at a show. So yeah, I agree. Don't buy it at the beginning, at the end, for sure. If they still have them, you might miss out.
But yeah, that was basically all we really had to say about the whole vinyl thing. I mean, I love vinyl. I buy all the important records, you know, that I love on vinyl. I don't buy everything. There's certain things that I stream that I'm not going to search out to buy.
Yeah.
It's just like my main records that I would really like to keep forever, you know?
And it's also really good too. They have Record Store Day twice a year. They have the Black Friday one, and then they have the actual Record Store Day. And like, it just gets people out, gets to go to the music store. You know, it's really cool walking to in a record store. Like, they're kind of few and far between now. And I feel like if you haven't done it yet, and there's one in your town, or if there's one where you go to a city, if you like live close to a city, go check it out. It's magic in there. It's a different kind of magic than you would think.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, when I grew up, you know?
Vibrations.
Yeah, vibrations. But anyway, yeah, after this ad, we'll get into our acoustic playlists for the week. Yeah, stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
And we're back here on Songs for the Moment. Coming up now, like Sean said before we came to an ad, we're going to be talking about our favorite acoustic songs on this. This is our theme that you guys voted on. I'm pretty pumped about it. So without further ado, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
All right. So I thought this was going to be pretty fun. Once I saw the results of the poll, didn't expect it, honestly. But my first one is Andy McKee, the song Drifting. I heard Andy McKee in 2006, I think. This album came out in 2005. It's probably like the first or second most popular song on the record. His style, once he got popular, I started hearing a lot more dudes play acoustic like this, with the whole, like, you know, playing the percussive side, like playing percussion on the acoustic while keeping the song going. It's really cool, like really cool style. It's funny because I don't really listen to a lot of acoustic music, but I do have a list of certain songs. Like, I like pretty depressing acoustic songs.
Same here.
all these songs are pretty depressing. But Andy McKee's playing is probably the most like shreddy acoustic thing on here, from like my guitar playing technicality standpoint that I wanted to include in my list. Everything else is very song oriented and feel and mood oriented. But yeah, that's Andy McKee, the song Drifting.
Justin Steer, who's a pretty good singer, songwriter, guitar player, where Sean is now, where I grew up too. He's the one who introduced me to that guy. I've heard of him because of him. So that's really funny you put him on the list. I'll definitely have to check that song out.
Yeah, it's really good. Most of his songs are good. I haven't really ever heard a song that he's done that I haven't liked.
Sweet. All right, so my first song is a very popular song by this band. I first heard it on Punko's Acoustic One way back in the day, like sophomore, junior year of high school. Might have been sophomore. I ended up buying that CD at Hot Topic, I think. I think that's where I bought it. It's Swing Life Away by Rise Against. And it's a great song. It reminds me of growing up in K-May, like just feeling like, you know, it kind of reminds of just hanging out with my friends and, you know, our time in the back house, dude. Like, it reminds me of just like hanging out. We always like dreaming of doing bigger and better things and talking about going to California, Entourage, and all that garbage. it's just one of those feel good songs, man. And I love Rise Against. They're great. I really want to, speaking of vinyl, I really want to pick up their box set that they just released last year. I like this song, man. It's cool. I remember living in Arizona and going to a guitar center with Sean Haggerty and Nate Lewis, and they would play it on guitar and sing it in this like guitar room. There was like this like acoustic guitar room, I guess they have in guitar centers, and they would just play it, and we would all just sit there and sing it. It was pretty cool. So
I never got into Rise Against, honestly, and it's nothing against them. You know, it's just not one of those genres that I listen to all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I listen to mostly.
Yeah. Yeah. Way different, and it's all right. It's all good. No, they just remind me of, like, I don't know, I couldn't even tell you what they are. Like, are they like, so when I first heard them, they were kind of like punkish, like
Rise
new,
Against,
like new wave punkish, I guess you could say. I don't know.
I would say that they're like power punk.
Power punk, yeah. That makes sense.
Power, I wouldn't call them pop punk, but yeah, definitely power punk.
Power punk. Okay, so yeah, there you go. And the first song I heard from them was Like an Angel, and it was on the, what was it called? They Take Action Tour compilation. And that was like on the one CD. So, I couldn't say I'm a big fan, cause I'm not, I just like some of their songs, like some of their hits. And Like an Angel is like a deeper cut. But like, Swing Life Away, awesome song. It's my favorite song by them, to be honest. So there you go.
Nice. Yeah. So, my next song would be, Green Day's Good Riddance.
Yes.
I was going to put it on the list as a bonus, but this, I think, was like the first acoustic song other than like, you know, stuff my dad showed me, like Wish You Were Here from Pink Floyd and stuff, which almost made the list, but I didn't want to put another Pink Floyd song on the list. So I chose Green Day's Good Riddance because it's a staple acoustic song, and everybody knows it. Not really a whole ton to say about it other than that, to be honest with you. Green Day's great, great songwriting. I'm not really a fan of newer Green Day, personally. I like, you know, Dookie, and like I think one after that was what, Nimrod, I think?
Nimrod, and then there was the one with the song Warning on it. That was the last good Pink, or not Pink Floyd, Green Day album that I actually liked.
Okay.
I mean, American Idiot was fine, but it wasn't.
I mean, they're still good songwriters. You can't deny that. And I mean, the recording is great, obviously, because they got a world-class studios and stuff. But, like, it, I don't know. Not my cup of tea, totally.
I get it, yeah.
Other than, like, old Green Day. But, yeah, not much to say. Green Day, Good Riddance. Perfect. Old school. You could say, like, early emo.
Mm-hmm, very early, yeah. I know the song because of Seinfeld at the end of the last episode of the last season. Final episode of the show, they played that.
Oh, I forgot they used this song.
Yeah.
That's a good call out, buddy.
Yeah, man. Someone's got to bring up the Seinfeld episode. I mean, it's got to happen. Not a lot of people were happy with the way it ended, but that's a good song to play at the end of a show.
Yeah.
It reminds me of this one video that I saw. Like, it's a Vine and some guy's playing it and he's like trying to get it right. He's like, darn, 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 darn. And then he messes up. He goes, fuck. And it's just really funny. And it's just a quick little Vine video. 7 seconds of funny.
Honestly, Vine used to be awesome. There was some, I laughed really hard a lot of times at work, killing time on Vine.
Yep. Some good times when that thing was around. Apparently, it's coming back, but we'll see.
What? Nice.
Yeah, Vine 2. It's called V2 or whatever. I don't know if that was like a troll by the guy who created it just to get people to go crazy, but I think it's a real thing because it was a big news story like sometime last year.
Hmm.
So.
But yeah, what would your next song be, my friend?
So we're going to go north of the border here, and we're not talking about Nickelback, so don't worry. It's okay. I got you guys. No Nickelback on the show. I still don't understand, but we'll talk about it another day. We're going to go with City in Color, Sleep in Sickness. Nice. I discovered this song at a really low time period of my life, and it fit so perfectly. I had no job. I was living with my parents for a little bit. It was kind of in limbo. It was between me coming back from Arizona and finally getting on my feet again. It was like in that between moment. And McDonald's even didn't want to hire me, so it was just like, fuck my life at this point. So the song, I found it, believe it or not, I found it in a music video. So at the end of each hockey season, when someone wins the Stanley Cup, there's a Hockey Night in Canada does this like montage. It's a season end montage. They go through the whole playoffs and it's really cool, and they use some good music. They had Tonight by Smashing Pumpkins, which fit so perfectly for that season. And Sleeping Sickness was one of the older ones, and I was like, this song's really good. And I was like, oh, it's City and Color, I really like this guy. So yeah, I mean, there's not much. It's a sad song, but it's really good. City and Color is great. What's the band that the guys, the City and Color, to do the singer, he's from like Boys Night Out, I think. Or is it
nuts. Hold on 1 second, because I've been trying to think of it for the past like 20 seconds, honestly.
I don't think it's Boys Night Out. I think it's something else.
City and Color.
His name's Dallas, I think.
Yeah. He's from Alexis on Fire.
Alexis on Fire. So it was close. Boys Says Fire. Guys
Alexis
on Out. Alexis
on Fire. Yeah.
So yeah. So there you go. I such a good song. Check it out. Check out any other. It's like most of the stuff that he puts out is acoustic anyway. So it was like very easy to pick from their catalog. It was either between that song or something by Dustin Kensher, the singer from Thrice. But I went with City and Color instead.
Okay. That was a good choice though. My next jam. Let's see here. I'll go Circus Survive / Anthony Green, because it's on a Circus Survive record, but it's, I think, just Anthony Green playing guitar and singing. It's the last bit of music on their first record, Juturna. The song Meet Me and Mom Talk. It's about like, I don't know, a minute and a half long. And it's got such a good vibe to it. The melody's really, really easy to get stuck in your head, like on first listen. And it's just like the perfect end to the record. That was one of my favorite parts of that whole album. And that's a big thing, because that album was huge to me. Like every song on that record was great.
I like how Anthony.
I don't know if you're a Circa fan. I know you're an Anthony Green fan.
I wouldn't say I was like, you know, like I liked their stuff. I wouldn't say I'm like a fan. I have to dive deeper into it.
Definitely start at Juturna.
Okay.
Personally, I think my favorite albums from them are Juturna, and On Letting Go. Their first two albums, I think. But none of them are really bad. Their new stuff is good, and I think they're getting ready to put out a new record.
Sweet.
Which I'm pretty hyped to hear. It's always good to hear new music from a band you've been listening to forever. Like, we found out about this band from MySpace, because the singer of Seosin had quit and started a new band, and we were like, what?
MySpace, man, back in the day was everything to discover music, man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, we should probably do an episode of just
bands we discovered on MySpace.
Fuck yes. Yeah, dude. That's like the greatest idea ever. We also got to do what we did last year at this time, is our most anticipated of 2019. So,
oh, I've got a lot.
Yeah, me too. There's one band that was on last year's list that will definitely be on this year's list because they pushed back. We'll talk about that another day. That was actually going to be a piece of news, but I'm like, no one's really going to care about that. So we'll talk about that in the most anticipated, because I got a lot to say about it. My next song is, let me pull it up because my phone went nuts, is a cover of a Bad Religion song by another legendary punk rocker, Tim Armstrong, aka Tim Timebomb from Rancid, and this is Los Angeles Is Burning. That's one of my favorite Bad Religion songs, but to hear Tim do it acoustically with his unique, raspy, weird voice that he uses, was really cool. I forgot that he put out a whole bunch of acoustic songs, Rancid songs and stuff on his own, after Rancid took some time away from recording and touring and all that good stuff. And there's not really much I could say about it. It's a really good Bad Religion song, but like the acoustic version's cool. If you like Rancid, go listen to Tim Timebomb stuff. He's put out a reggae album. You know, he's really much into that kind of music, ska, reggae, punk, you know. So, I mean, it's what he grew up on. But his cover of Los Angeles Is Burning is really cool. And yeah, that's really all I could say about that. It's it's just something I wanted to put on there because I was actually listening to it the other day, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've never really gotten into like Rancid or anything like that. What I am finding out is there's a lot of bands that I guess I never really listened to not because I thought that they were dumb or anything. It's because I never got around to it, and I kind of classified what they sound like in my head without actually listening to them based on their name. And I'm starting to hear some of these bands now and being like, damn, why didn't I listen to these guys? You know?
Yeah.
And at that point, when you're like, when you feel like you're late on listening to a band, it feels like a daunting task to pick an album from their library that you think is going to resonate for you. You know, versus like when you discovered them. Like, a lot of the reason why, like, I like an album, like a band's first album most of the time, is because that was the first album I heard from them. And that's why I think it's the best, because it made the biggest impact on me.
Makes sense.
You know, I think that's why a lot of people have a big expectation of a sophomore album.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I mean, the first one always, it's like a movie, you know, like the first one's always the best. Usually, yeah, especially usually. If it's in a series, that's what a band is. A band puts out a whole bunch of, you know, records. It's a series. And there's some that are great. There's some that are not, you know. And I think when you go into it, an album after a debut, you have to have, you got to keep your expectations at a low, you know, like keep them in check, because people tend to do this all the time. Like, you know, you get hype, you know, and you're just like, oh man, this just not, you know, not my cup of tea. You know, that's what right. happened with The Hunting Party by Linkin Park. I was like, really wasn't my favorite. You know, I like Linkin Park. I like a lot of the stuff they put out, but The Hunting Party is definitely like one of my least favorite albums. So it's like, and that wasn't even their sophomore. Their sophomore was Meteora, and I loved that album. I thought it was better than the first, you know, at the time. And, right. You know, I've come to appreciate it still, but Hybrid Theory is just off the chain and still is for me. so yeah, I get it. It's hard to keep your expectations low, especially if you're really into the band and really hype.
Right. However, there's some bands that break that mold for me. Like the first album I heard from Deftones was Adrenaline, and White Pony is my favorite album from them just because it's so like perfect. You know, I shared a meme that I found the other day. I think you might have seen it on Facebook before you deleted your Facebook, but it was like White Pony in the middle of a table and like a whole bunch of swords like converging in the middle on top of it, and it said like one sword said stoner kids, the other sword said like goths, the other sword said like cholos, the other sword said like something else.
And so they all can come together and agree to it, right?
Yeah. It's just like the perfect record kind of thing.
That's funny, because it's like what Rammstein, I can use this as an example. Like the first album I heard from them, like complete first album that I heard from them, was Mutter. And like, I've heard sporadic songs off of Harris Lloyd, their first record, and Shane Sucht, their second record. But like, Mutter is their third. And I like that over the first two, because the first two almost sound identical to me. Shane Sucht is legendary because it has Du Hast, and that's like their biggest hit in America at that time. It still kind of is. But Mutter is on a whole different level. And it's when they took their sound and literally threw it away and was like, we're gonna do this now, and that's how they've been sounding ever since, to where they don't sound like that dance band anymore, like that dance metal, the tans metal, as they would say, where it's like all the songs almost sound identical to me. Like, it's just weird. It's really hard to describe. If we ever do like a we're gonna do it for our Patreons one day, where we talk about albums and stuff, I might just literally break down why I think both the first and second Rammstein albums sound the same, and I'm like, I'm going to play you a song from Mutter. You're not going to believe that they're the same band. And they're not. Yeah. You know, to me, it doesn't sound like the same band.
Right. Yeah, no, that's something we really want to do, is just like do album breakdowns as like bonus episodes for Patreons. Just like albums that we talk about all the time that are near and dear to us, why we think they're so good song by song, like what tracks that what tracks took us a long time to get into personally or something like that.
Definitely.
Like which ones we thought were skippers that we got really into later on.
Yep. I think that's I think people will dig that. I think you will dig that. So if you want to join in on the fun, if you want to show us your ultimate support, mid-show plug, patreon.com/songspodcast. There you go.
Yeah. My next song would be Team Sleep's Death by Plane.
Yes.
This is a very short song. It's like a minute and 15 seconds or something like that. I forget where on the album it was. But it's very short. It's got a really eerie vibe to it. And the melody is super creepy. Yeah, just love this song. It's been one of my favorite acoustic songs for a super long time since I heard it. When Team Sleep had an album leak by accident. Like, back when albums leaked on the internet way before they actually came out.
Yeah. I remember that's the first time I ever listened to them. Is you gave me a copy of that thing. And what was the song that ended up becoming Tomb of Legalia? Used to be called Natalie Portman, right? Wasn't that what that song was called?
Yes. That was used to be called Natalie Portman.
Yeah,
that song is awesome. And then there's a song called Cambodia. They used to be called something else. Yeah, they renamed a lot of songs from that. But I don't know if Death by Plane made the actual release.
It didn't. So the Woodstock Sessions Volume 4 has that song on it. It's the second to last song. It's like a live album, I guess, or them playing like songs live, like in the studio. I don't know what that constitutes because I never actually heard that before. But I'm looking at their stuff on Spotify, and I don't think that ever.
No, I don't think it was. It was like one of those really, really short tracks that felt like a song idea that they just kind of threw on there that wound up getting leaked on that unmastered version.
I wish I could hear that. Can you still find that?
What, the unmastered version? I think I still have it. Let me pop up my hard drive folder.
Nice. I mean, I know, I need to hear that like old version. For some reason, it's, I guess, I like the one that came out, like the official version, but it's just like, you know, it's the nostalgia, I guess, of like listening to the unmastered version. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Unmastered Advance. Yeah, I have the original one, and then I have whole folder of demos with probably like 25 demos that they have.
Sweet.
That are probably like unreleased, and then I have a whole like other 3 demos. Yeah. I have a bunch of Team Sleep stuff I can zip to you.
Cool. All right. So my next song here on Acoustic Sounds is Chuck Reagan's The Boat off of Feast and Famine. I remember I was just searching for different like bands and acoustic stuff back like when like Kazaa and stuff, not even Kazaa, like LimeWire, and then like Torrance started to become bigger, and I was always a big fan of Hot Water Music, and I always liked that band. I liked the dude's voice, and I was like, oh, it's Chuck Reagan. He came out with a solo record, and I heard the record, and The Boat was on it, and it's really good. It's like this folky song. So other than the story about that, it's just I really like the song. Can't really talk much about it. I'll let the music speak for it. I just like it's like it feels like a song that would be playing over a montage of someone traveling around the country, like wayfaring, you know. Technically, right. Like, you know, I think I even used it in an episode of the wayfaring show that I did, I was part of, I edited for. So I remember I used some songs just randomly throughout the show, and I feel like I might have used it, or at least listened to it while I was on the road. But it just feels like one of those travel songs, like, you know, going somewhere, yeah. And it's like, you
like
know,
it's a song that gives you that, like, a specific feel.
Yeah. So that's all I have to say about it. Chuck Reagan's awesome. I listen to anything he's put out. Hot Water Music too. If you're like, you know, punk, he was the front man of that band, or was, or still is. I think he still is. I don't know if they released anything lately. I know they were just on tour, or they did a reunion tour, or like a whole record tour. You know, when they played the whole record. So check it out.
Try it out.
Do it.
But yeah. My next and last song on my list would be Elliott Smith's Waltz Number 2 XO off the album XO. I talked about Elliott Smith on the Songs of Sorrow because he's got probably one of the saddest stories in music, in my opinion. But this song is probably one of the most necessary songs to listen to if you haven't heard Elliott Smith before.
Okay.
When you go to Elliott Smith's page and Apple Music, XO is the first essential album that they suggest you listen to. It's awesome. It came out in like 1998. When I think of acoustic music, there's a couple of people I think of when I think of acoustic music, and Andy McKee and Elliott Smith are at the top of that list.
I dig it.
I mean, I already talked about Elliott Smith in a previous episode. You can go back and listen to that. It's the Songs of Sorrow episode. A lot of his songs have the same kind of vibe. So like I used to listen to him when I was super bummed out and stuff. That and like Team Sleep, Death by Plane, I used to listen to a lot when I was bummed out. The only thing that sucked about that song is it was so short. You would have to put it on repeat. Otherwise, you'd have to hit skip back like every minute or so.
I dig it. I just was on his page on Spotify and it was the second most listened to song on, on his just through his discography, so that's pretty sweet. Definitely have to check that out. I go back and listen to that Songs of Sorrow playlist a lot, so I listen to that Elliott Smith song a lot, so I'm starting to get into him a little bit just because of that one song.
Yeah,
and that's what we aim to do here when we do this show, so like
it's the entire reason we do it, man.
It works on me. Our own gimmick works on one of the hosts, so it works.
yeah honestly, I mean, like, because a lot of the times I'm in a bubble when I listen, when I'm looking for new music too. Like, I'm like, I see stuff recommended to me on Apple Music and I don't click on it because I'm like, oh, I probably wouldn't like that. But I mean, you don't know until you know.
You don't know if you don't know. Yeah, there you go. Like Notorious B.I.G. says, you don't know, or if you don't know, now you know.
And if you don't know, now you know.
There you go. My last song on my list is... Well, I had to throw this on here, but it was on, I've used this song before on a playlist, but it was specifically for this tribute show that we did back when this show first came out. I did it with fellow Linkin Park mega fan, Anthony DiStefano, one of my good friends. This song is the last song on A Thousand Suns, which is my favorite Linkin Park album, you know, besides Hybrid Theory, of course. Hybrid Theory kind of stands on its own as a classic. And the song is called The Messenger. And this song is a very upbeat, positive song. Like, and when I mean upbeat, like lyrically, it's upbeat. It's basically talking about, you know, being positive, you know, love will lead us, you know, to happiness and stuff like that. Like, it's just a very generally like good, happy, like give you hope type of song if you're feeling sad. And it basically talks about if you're sad and lonely and all that stuff, you know, just have hope. It's a really good song to end that record. That record is really, really like different from anything they've ever put out. I really enjoy it a lot. I have it on vinyl. I only have two Linkin Park albums, or no, I have three. I have the Collision Course, which they did with Jay-Z. I have Hybrid Theory, which was a, which was also a Record Store Day release. And then I have this one, A Thousand Suns, I got for Christmas a couple years ago. And, they played it at the Chester tribute show, and I was just blown away by how they pulled it off without Chester, because Chester's the one who sings on it. So it's a good sing-along song too. Like, I feel like if Linkin Park ever goes back on tour, you know, if Mike's just a singer, or they you know, find a new singer or whatever, they'll probably play this song a lot. So definitely check it out. It's one of my faves. You know, Linkin Park, you know, still relevant in my mind and in my head when I listen to music. I always put them on. And seeing Mike Shinoda last year and him playing a couple of Linkin Park songs, it was just really cool.
Yeah, so, and hearing Chester on that new song that just dropped.
Yes, so good.
On that side project. I forget whose side project was
Mark,
that.
Mark Morton.
Yes, thank you.
Yep.
Jesus, I can't believe I forgot that. But yeah, the song wasn't bad. It was cool to hear Chester on something different that wasn't Linkin Park,
yeah,
or anything in the vein that I've really heard him in before. And I could tell it was not something that he normally does, but his voice fit it it fit really well, and he was a good singer, man. I mean, it was good.
Yeah, man. I think it's just in my opinion, I think he's one of the better singers out of like the rock genre at that point. Like specifically, like I don't think anyone in that genre had a voice like him. So different, and so like it's really hard to like mimic. It's like no one can really get close to it if you like try to mimic it. It just can't. I don't think they'll ever hire someone else to sing. If they Linkin Park comes back, I think it's just gonna be Mike, because I think Mike just do a good job on his own. So, I mean, they had a guy singing at the Shinoda shows who was playing guitar and keyboards, sing Chester's parts, especially in the Catalyst, not the Catalyst, Iridescent, and he sounded good. It wasn't Chester. You can definitely tell it's not that guy. So,
yeah,
but yeah, you have any bonuses?
Honestly, I do not.
Okay.
I don't have any bonuses.
I threw just one on there just for fun, because I didn't know if you had one. I always try to throw one on. It's the acoustic version of Woe by Say Anything. It's off of Punk Ghost Acoustic Volume 2. If you like Say Anything, haven't heard this version, which I feel like if you like Say Anything, you probably heard this version, but if not, check it out. It's a song off of their their classic album, if you want to call it that. It Was a Boy. It Was a Real Boy album. And yeah, it's good. Check it out. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. That concludes the episode for this week for our acoustic episodes. Check out our Twitter for a new poll of what we would be doing next week. And we'll have some fresh news for you guys next week. Be sure to check out our feed and go check out previous episodes. And where can people find you at, Glenn?
They can find me at RealGrod on Twitter and Instagram. I have no Facebook no more. I am 2 weeks sober. No, I'm only a week sober. No, 2 weeks sober. I did it 2 weeks ago, I think. Yeah. 2 weeks ago without Facebook, and it's been nice. It's been really good. So no Facebook for me. I mean, I have That's a public cool. page, but like I only post on there when I need to, and I don't spend my time, you know, because I don't have anything to scroll through on that. So, but yeah, you can find me there. And if you want to support us with your ultimate support, patreon.com/songspodcast. We're going to be doing, like we talked about earlier, we're going to be doing album spotlights, artist spotlights. You'll get ad-free shows, discounts, live. We'll do a live chat. I think I really want to set up a Discord. I like Discord. I see the communities that people build on those things, and it can work. I just feel like the last couple times I've tried it with different projects, just everyone from that, I guess that kind of group likes Twitter. They like Twitter DMs, and I hate it. So eventually, once you know we get a lot of you fans out there of the show joining on, we can start a Discord community, and that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I'd really like that. That'd be awesome. We could do we could post direct links to our blog posts in there and stuff like that too. Yeah, you guys can find me at Sean Songs Podcast on Instagram and Sean Songs Cast, no pod, on Twitter, because you can't have that many characters on Twitter. And I don't really want to switch my Instagram name again. So they're different now. As always, don't forget to check the show notes for the Apple Music and Spotify playlists that we do every week for you guys to listen to the songs that we talk about in the episode. Yeah. And I hope you guys have a really, really good week.
You definitely should. Also, if you want to wear for the moment and wear t-shirts, we have merch. We have to say that too. Merch.songspodcast.com. And that's it. So yeah, have a good week. As Sean said, I hope you have a wonderful week. Tell everyone about the show, and thanks for listening to Songs for the Moment, where every moment has a soundtrack. Later on,
guys.